study together of the question, if every member of the church loved the church as much as I do, would the church be stronger or would it be weaker? And we examined some things this morning. We want to conclude this examination. And we ended up this morning talking about that, can anyone be dependent on to get things done? Any church and any organization, whether it's a spiritual kingdom like the church or whether it is an institution, it has to have things that must be accomplished. There are tasks that must be done, and the Lord's church is no different than that. And so can we, anyone, be dependent on to get things done? In talking about this very subject in the book of Romans, Paul used the illustration that, for as we have many members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function. So we, being many, are one body in Christ, and individually members one of another. You notice that the body has many members. And many members means that there are many opportunities and many people that are part of that one body, but notice they don't all have the same function. I've always tried to tell the ladies of the congregation, just because you don't take part in the public service doesn't mean that you're not a necessary part of the church. And whether you're young or old, or whether you're in the middle, it really doesn't matter. Every person is important, and every person has a role. And what this simply means, and if you also read 1 Corinthians chapter number 12, where Paul makes this argument using the physical body, that every person has a talent. You have something that you can bring to the table. You have something that you can do. What you must find out is what that is. And whatever that is, you must be willing and you must be dedicated and committed that you're going to fill your role. Because there's no one that can fill your role except you. And there's something that we all can do. Didn't we just sing that song a moment ago? There is room in the kingdom. There's a place in the service. There is work that we all can do. And it may be just as simple as encouraging people who are not able to be here on a regular basis. It might be sending a card. It might be stopping by and taking 5 or 10 minutes and letting somebody know that you are concerned about them and ask if there's anything you can do for them. That's a small thing, but you'll never know how much that means until you are placed in that position. Till you are on the receiving end of that, you will never know the encouragement and the help that it is to people that find themselves in those conditions. And you see, we see that the local church needs many things. And continuing in Romans 12, it says, having then gifts different according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. In prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. Or in ministry, let us use it in our ministry, he who teaches in teaching. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm aware that we all don't have the same ability. We're not all teachers, we're not all song leaders, and we're not all people who can write well or people that can do things. And you might, you know, in the parable of the talents in Matthew 25, the emphasis is not on how many talents you have. It doesn't matter if you got 5, 2, or 1. It doesn't matter. What you need to understand is that if you have talent, don't hide the talent. That's what the one talent man was not an unprofitable servant because he had one talent. That didn't make him unprofitable. The reason that he was unprofitable is because he took the talent he had and he hid it and he didn't use it. We need to use our talent. We need to do what we can in order to get things done that have to be done on a regular basis. And we need to do that according to the grace that has been given us. Do you remember in the parable of the talents what God did to that one talent unprofitable servant? He gave his talent to someone else. He gave his talent to someone else who had many talents, but he knew that one other talent he would use it. And so we need to learn from that. In verse 8 of this same chapter, it says, he who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, he who shows mercy with cheerfulness. Let me give you an illustration of what I'm talking about. Where I used to preach in Knollwood, Ohio, and we're at the church at Knollwood in Beaver Creek, there was a young man who signed up, and I was given the task there of getting men to do the Wednesday night invitation. And he wanted to sign up and he wanted to do it, so I put him on the list and I put him on the schedule a couple times. But brethren, it was a chore just to listen to him, because he was so uncomfortable and he was so disorganized that it took away from the things that he said. But you know, there were other things that you could ask this brother to do, and he was a whiz. If you told him that this person needed to be seen, or if this person had a need, or if this person needed a ride to go here or to go there, or could you spend a few moments with this person, he's struggling in his faith. He was Johnny on the spot. He would always volunteer to do that stuff. Every work day he was there. Every time there was a need in the congregation, a physical need, if he had the ability, he would take care of that need. You wouldn't even have to ask him. He'd just take care of it. But giving the invitation, he didn't have that talent. He just didn't have the ability to do that. And so I took him aside one Wednesday night and brought him in my office and set him down. And I tried to tell him, and you know what? You're always worried that you're going to pour fire on somebody's zeal. That you're going to discourage them when you don't want to pour fire on their zeal. But brethren, it's not discouraging when you try to tell a person that they don't have the ability to do something that they're trying to do. But you know, this brother, he didn't get angry. He didn't get mad. You know what? As a matter of fact, he thanked me. Because he said, I'm glad you took me off the hook. Because I was really struggling trying to do that, but I felt that I needed to try. And I appreciated that he tried. And brethren, sometimes that's how you learn what your talent is and what your talent isn't. Sometimes you've got to get out of your element. Sometimes, and I'll give you another illustration using myself. You know that song that we sang, first of all, There's Room in God's Kingdom? That is a special place in my heart. When I was living in Las Vegas, the first church that I attended before I started preaching, they had a fifth Sunday singing, like we have five Sundays. The fifth Sunday on Sunday evening would be a singing service. I mean, they were asking me every month. They would come and me begging me to lead a song. You know, I tried to tell them, I don't have the pitch. I don't know how to speed it up, to slow it down, to start it. I just don't have that ability. You know, they just kept hounding me. So finally, I was like the woman that kept pestering the judge. I said, okay, I'll do it. And you know what I did? For a month, I practiced that song. There is room in the kingdom. I memorized that song. And you could ask Rita, I was practicing it all the time. I got up there to lead that on Sunday night, and one of our song leaders was a big old boy. He's about 6'6", weighed about 260, and he's standing in the back, and as I'm leading the song, he's going like this. And I don't know what that means. He's telling me what that means is to speed up. I don't know how to speed it up, slow it down, or kill it. I didn't know how to do any of that. But you know what? They never asked me again. You know, brethren, I just don't have that talent. But you know what? That doesn't mean I can't do something else. You know, I don't have to be a song leader to get to heaven. You don't got to be a preacher to get to heaven. You don't have to be an elder. You don't have to be a deacon. You don't have to be a Bible class teacher to get to heaven. But listen to me. If you have that ability and you don't use it, you will give an account to God for that. Because it's a difference about not having an ability or having the ability and not wanting to use it or not developing it because we're too busy doing other things. That's the difference. The difference is you're not going to be judged and held accountable for something. You know, the Bible says in 2 Corinthians 8, verse 12, it's according to what one has, not according to what he has not. You're not ever going to be charged by God for something that you don't have the ability to do. But ladies and gentlemen, if you have the ability and you have the talent and you're not pursuing it, then you may have given account for that. And while I'm on this subject, I want to put a bug in some of the men's ear. You know, in the next few months, we're going to be talking about elders. Now, I want you to think about, I've had people say, well, we don't have anybody qualified. Well, could it be that we don't have anybody qualified, and could one of the qualifications of being an elder is desire? Think about this for a minute. I want you to think about this. What is the most difficult qualification of an elder, and the one that gets most of the debate and the discussion when you're talking about qualifications of elders? It's family. It's your children. It's your wife. Whether your children are faithful, whether they're faithful and whether they have been taught and whether or not your wife meets the qualifications of the wife that are given in 1 Timothy chapter 3. But what if you're a man and you've done that? You've raised your children in such a way that they are believers, and you have a godly wife, and you have a knowledgeable wife, and the most difficult part you've done, then what's keeping you from being an elder? What's keeping you from being an elder? And the question is, let's say you say, well, I'm not apt to teach. You can fix that. You can do something about that. Well, let's say, well, I'm not sure that I know how to handle the gay area. You can fix that too. You see, there are things that you can work on, but you know, if you haven't done the preparation in your family, those are things that are very difficult to fix after the fact. But the other things, do you realize that there are only three qualifications that are for elders that are different than what are qualifications for every other Christian? Every qualification of the Christian, except three, are required of every male Christian. Everyone, except three. You don't have to be married, and you don't have to have children. And the desire, that's a personal thing. But all the other qualifications are things that we are to put on and have that character in our lives. Now, if that be true, if there's only three things that are different for the qualification of an elder than for every other member of the Lord's church who is a man, then why is the church, why doesn't have elders? Why are so many churches without elders? Could it be that we have our priorities wrong? Could it be we're not applying ourselves to be able to, you know what, I would tell men like Tim, men like Tommy, and men like Jason and Kyle, I would tell you, start right now. Start right now preparing yourself to be an elder. Don't wait till 20 or 30 years from now. You start right now in preparing yourself to be an elder. Because you know what the Lord's church needs more than it needs anything else? It needs good leadership. It needs elders. But you don't wake up when you're 40 years old and say, well, you know, I think I want to be an elder. Don't wait until you're 40. You do it when you're young and you look and you help your wife grow and you grow and you dedicate your life to raising your children and nurturing the admonition of the Lord. And you begin right now. And then when your generation comes up and needs elders in the Lord's church, you'll have men that are qualified. I'm afraid that we shot ourselves in the foot. We did not make the preparation that we needed to, and that's why we have an elder shortage. And so we need to find what our talent is, and we need to use it to the best of our ability. Now, another question I asked this morning, should we have sufficient financial support to carry out the work? Now, in Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 9, it says, do you honor the Lord with your possessions and the first fruits of your increase? And in Romans chapter 12 and verse 8, it talks about giving with liberality. Now, what does it mean to be giving with liberality? So let me ask you a question. Giving is a personal thing. It is something that's between you and God. But would you be ashamed for people to know what you give? Would you be ashamed for the status of life, for the position of life that you're in, and the income that you might have, and the amount of money that you give? Would you be ashamed if people knew that? Now, you know what? I don't need to know that. The only one that needs to know that's God. And God knows that. And so, do we give liberality? And what this means with liberality, it means sacrificially. Do we give with sacrifice? You remember the story in the New Testament of a widow in the temple? And there were people who were throwing in a lot of money into the treasury, but this poor widow threw in two mites. And the Lord said, she's more blessed. She gave less, but she's more blessed than those who gave in abundance. Because she gave from her poverty. You know what that means? She gave in faith. She gave in faith knowing that that was her livelihood. Now, brethren, I'm not suggesting, and neither is God, that you need to be a pauper because you need to give all your money to the Lord. That's a television evangelist thing. I don't believe the Bible teaches that. But the Bible does say that our giving should be proportionate to our blessings. Now, Do we give as we've been prospered? On the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by something, storing up that you may prosper, that there be no collection when I come. Do you give as you've been prospered? And what that means is as you've been blessed. And those who have more blessing, God expects more.
Brethren, that's just the simple truth. It goes back to the talent. However you've been blessed, that's the proportion that you should give. Now, let me ask you something. And I've asked people this over the years, and I've had to consider this myself. Now, you know, if I'm laying up for myself a retirement account, there's nothing wrong with doing that for, you know, doing that for a rainy day and setting up for when I'm older so I can take care of myself. But I get a yearly dividend for that because I'm setting aside money and I prosper from that. Do you ever give any of that to the Lord? Do you ever think He is due any of that? If I have investments and I'm making money on my investments and I'm making a substantial bit of money, do I ever consider God's part in that? Do I ever give part of that to the Lord? Or what if I'm giving it as I prosper, as I prospered in the blessings that He's given me? You see, do you give cheerfully? Now, what does that mean? That means, you know, I can make another payment if I did not make a contribution this week on my car. I could be one call through payment to paying my car off. Or I could get a month ahead on my rent or my mortgage payment. Now, brethren, if you give grudgingly, keep it in your pocket. It's not helping you one little bit. Because God's not accepting. If you gave $1,000 and you gave it grudgingly, it's not helping you a bit. Because God's not going to accept it. You give cheerfully. So let each one of you, as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity. What does it mean of necessity? Do you give because you don't want people to see you not putting nothing in the plate when it comes by? Do you give because this is what we always do on the first day of the week? Do you give because it's just a habit? We always do this every Sunday, so I give. Or do you do it because you want to do it? Because you want to help the Lord's work? Because you want to help and do your part? You know what? There's only two people that know that. You know it, and God knows it. And you know what? God is going to judge you about your attitude about that. About our attitude and our giving. The local church has work to do, and unbelievers, believe it or not, it requires money. Now you Philippians know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church shared with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only. And you know, it takes work, and it takes money. We have heat in the building and air. Aren't you glad we have air? 90 degrees outside, I'm glad we have air in here. But then, you know, that means an electric bill. We put a new roof on the building last month because that's the upkeep of the building. The building's a blessing from God. That takes money. It takes money to support a local evangelist like you support me in my work. That takes money. Now, all of that takes money. Where does that money come from? You know what? We're not authorized to have bake sales or car washes or to have a rummage sale or have Monte Carlo night to raise money. The only way that we can raise money for the Lord's church comes from the free will offering of its members. That's how we raise money for the things that we do. Now, the church has bills. It has obligations. The teaching material, that costs money. When you buy teaching material, that costs money. And so the things that we do in proclamating the gospel, the radio program, that costs money. We pay a monthly fee to be on the radio. That costs money. What if everyone gave as you do? Now I want you to think about this for a minute. What if everybody had the same attitude about giving that you do? And they gave like you did. Would we be able to carry out our work? Would we be able to meet our obligation? Or would we always be in the red? Think about that for a moment. If the barometer of giving was me, and everybody gave like I gave, would that number be lower or higher on the board? Think about that. Would it be lower or would it be higher? And could we meet our obligation? You know, I've been in churches that we had to, that had the right men that they support, that they couldn't send them the next month's check because there wasn't enough money in the treasury. And you know what was sad about that? We had about 10 members of the church there at that place where I grew up that were making at the time in the mid-70s over $100,000 a year. And we couldn't meet our obligations. Brethren, there's something wrong with that. Do you go everywhere preaching the word? That's what the early church did. Therefore, those who were scattered went around everywhere preaching the word. Then Philip went down to the city of Samaria and preached to them. Brother, personal evangelism, you know, that's what it is. It's personal. You know what that means? That doesn't mean preacher. That means personal. And you know what? I have this responsibility just like you do. My personal evangelism isn't fulfilled by what I do here on Sunday morning or Sunday night or Wednesday night. Personally, I have the same responsibility to try to reach those who I come in contact with. You know, I go into the bank, and they know me by face, and I go in there all the time, and I invite them to a meeting. I invite them to the services. Once in a while, a religious discussion, they'll say, hey, did you hear about this and you know, the last couple of months with Mr. Cappings about when the world was going to end on May 21st? You know, I've been in a couple of places where they wanted to talk to me about that. That's great. So we talked about it, and we talked about it. Doesn't it bother you that it didn't come about? And they said, well, I knew it wouldn't come about. I said, why did you know that? Because he's no prophet. That's right. But how did you know that? Well, I know it because it didn't come about. But you know what? God's Word said that. And I pointed him to Deuteronomy 22 that says, write down what a prophet says. And when it doesn't come about, you know that that man spoke presumptuously. You know what that is? That's an avenue to teach. That's an opportunity to teach. And you come in these contacts every day. You know what? Who has a better opportunity to teach your neighbor? You or me? Who has a better opportunity to teach your acquaintances that you are friends with that are in the world? You or me? What about your family who are not members of the church? Who has more of an inroad with them? You or me? Brethren, you know the answer to that. We have to be, you know what? Ask me about my grandchildren. Man, I could talk about my grandchildren. Ask me about my kids. I'll talk about my kids. You know why? It's easier for me to talk about that because I love them. They mean so much in my life, but you know what? I love them, but I love the gospel more, and I'd rather share the gospel with somebody than tell them about my grandkids. Because telling them about the gospel is more important than my grandkids. But brethren, do we have a problem talking about the Bible? But we don't have a problem talking about, it's not that we have a problem in talking. We can talk about a lot of things, but we seem to have a problem talking about the Bible. And you know why sometimes that is? Is that we're not prepared and we're afraid that we're going to be asked a proverbial question and we won't know an answer to. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. You are far, far ahead of most religious people today in your knowledge of the Bible. If you've done any study, if you've done any reading over the years, you are so far ahead of the average person in the world because they have no understanding about the Bible. They have a very, very thin understanding of the Bible. And so, you know that song I told you this morning? We're the world's Bible. Are we interested in personal evangelism? Are we worried about the lost? Do you care if your neighbor, your friend, or your coworker is lost? I am a debtor to both the Greeks and the barbarians, both to the wise and the unwise. So as much as in me, I'm ready to preach the gospel to you that are Rome also. You know, Brother Shirley talked about verse 2 in our lesson about don't be by sorrow driven. You know when a lot of Christians think about their neighbor or their friend is when they're standing in front of the casket. He said, you know, I was going to talk to him about the Lord. I was going to talk to him about the church. Let me ask you an honest question. What good is that now? How can that help that person now? You know, I tell husbands all the time, don't wait for your wife's funeral to send her flowers because she won't appreciate them. Don't wait until they can't appreciate it. Do it while they can appreciate it. Brethren, if you have a friend or a neighbor or a co-worker or a relative that's outside the church, what is the greatest need they have in their life? I don't care how much money they make. I don't care where they live. I don't care what they do. I don't care what their family situation is. What is the greatest need they have if they're not a member of the Lord's church? They need to hear the gospel. And we are the vehicle for to get that done. Now, let me ask you a question. You can forget this Dayton area. I forgot the Dayton. What if everyone engaged in personal evangelism as you are? Would the church grow with your help? Would you hear the gospel in the Harrodsburg area? What if everybody had the same attitude about personal evangelism that you do? Would anybody in the world be taught the truth? Would anybody have the opportunity to hear the truth? If everybody was as diligent and dedicated to personal evangelism as you are, would the gospel message go forth in this city? You know, that's a good question. I'm glad I thought that up. I thought it was a good question. Now, those who love the Lord love unity based on what God has said. I do not pray for these alone, but also for those who will believe in me through the word, that they may be one as you are in me, Father, are in me and I in you, that there may be one in us, that the world may believe that you have sent me. Those who love the Lord love unity. You know, in all the years that I've been a Christian, and I've been a Christian now since I was 13 years old, and that's way too many years to tell you how many it is. It's over 40. But you know the one thing that I have learned to really dislike in my life? Church problems. And you know what? I have seen them all my life. People who get in the church and they want their way. It's going to be this way, and it's going to be this way, or I'm going to cause trouble. You know, I was in a business meeting when I was 14 years old in Indiana, and we were discussing a subject, and one of the men in the congregation during the business meeting said, "We're going to have it this way, or I'm going to cause trouble." What an attitude. What an attitude. Brethren, you know what? From time to time, we're going to have differences. Imagine that. We're not going to agree on some things. What are we going to do when we don't agree upon things? I'll tell you one thing we're not going to do. We're not going to argue about it in Bible class. We're not going to get in a knockdown, drag-out fight in that I'm right and you're wrong. We're not going to do any of that. Because you know what that is? That's discouraging. And what about a visitor sitting in the audience when the preacher and somebody in the audience is fussing and fuming because they don't agree? Brethren, that's nonsense. And that kind of thing will turn people. Now, how would you present a loving, unified group of people and a person sitting in the audience and see that kind of exchange and ask yourself, do I want to put myself in that mess? We're not going to have any of that because that's ungodly. That's counterproductive. When we have differences, there is a place for our differences to be discussed. And they are not in a Bible class. Where we discuss our differences is face to face, in a kitchen table, with the Bible open, in prayer, and sort out our differences. And brethren, that's what I will seek to do. Because that way, we benefit, and the church benefits. Unity is I look for ways to agree. And you know what? There are some things that we don't have to agree about. There are some things God gives us the liberty that we can have different opinions about. Now, if you're here and you want an instrument, and I don't, well, that's a problem. Because that's a matter of doctrine. But, if you want to put lights on your house during the Christmas season, But I feel that I couldn't do that. By the way, I don't feel that way, but as an example, I feel that I can't do that. That's okay. That's okay. I have a good friend who has a very strong conviction about the holidays, the Christmas holiday. And he's very conscientious, and he does nothing that would give the impression to anyone that might be misconstrued that he believes Jesus was born on December 25th. And I respect him. But you know what I never did in all the years I knew him? I never invited him to my house in December. Never. You know why? Because I would not infringe and I would not force my opinion on him. Why would I drive a wedge unnecessarily? I had a sister-in-law for many, many years who wore the covering. And we never discussed it. I never discussed it with her. One day, she came to me and said, Keith, would you sit and study this subject, the covering, with me? I said, sure, I'll study it with you. I'll let you know what I've learned about it, my study about it. And we studied about it. And about 3 months later, she quit wearing it. But you see, I never forced the issue. If she wanted to wear it, I'd be perfectly happy to let her wear it. I don't have a problem. If you have that conviction to wear it, wear it. But don't bind your conviction on me. Don't bind your conviction on the church. Because what that does is it drives a wedge. And what it does is it destroys unity. And when you destroy unity, you know what you do? You invite problems into the Lord's church. Do you know how many churches have split over personal things? Not over doctrinal things. You know there was a church in Texas who they were painting the building. And they couldn't decide on yellow or blue. I don't know why they like yellow. I like blue, but yellow, I don't know about that. But anyway, they wanted yellow and blue, and they couldn't decide. So you know what they did? They painted this side yellow, and they painted this side blue. And the yellow people sat on this side, and the blue people sat on that side. Let me give you another illustration. I had a good friend that went to Texas to do a meeting, and the church was all at odds. They were up in arms. They were about to divide. What were they going to divide over? Because somebody was introducing apostasy in the Lord's church? Because somebody was seeking to draw discord by teaching error? Oh, no. You know what they were dividing over, getting ready to divide over? They have walnut trees that were on their property. I mean, not just a few, a bunch. And there was a lot of walnuts. And there was a big discussion what to do with the walnuts. Some of them wanted to sell them, put the money in the treasury. Others wanted to sell them and give the money to the preacher. I would have been all for that one. The other people wanted to let the congregation divide them up and let everybody take whatever they wanted. And so they were asking this visiting preacher, what do you think we ought to do? He said, get an axe and cut down the walnut trees. And you know what? That's what they did. And you know what? The church didn't split. Brethren, how silly can we get? How silly can we get? You know what I've learned a long time ago? Fight the battles that need to be fought. And don't make more trouble than you need. Learn what you need to be united on and learn what you can be divided upon. Too many cause problems with their attitudes and their agenda and their teaching. For we are still carnal. For where there's envy, strife, and division among you, are you not carnal and behaving like men? Brethren, you could be right, but if you've got a poor attitude, it's not going to help the situation. You know, I have seen men who have the right position, but their attitude was so gritty, and their attitude was so ungodly that it took away from what they were trying to do. Brethren, there's a way in putting your point across. You know, I've told you, you can disagree with anything I say in the Bible class. If you have a difference of something that I've said, and you can offer that difference, but don't raise up your hand and say, Brother Gray, that's the most stupid comment that I've ever heard. Brethren, I would never do that to you, and don't you ever do it to me. Because you only do it once. Because, brother, you see, that doesn't demonstrate love. That doesn't demonstrate compassion. There is a way to do human communication. And brother, we don't have to get ugly. We don't have to get mean. And we don't have to have our way, do we? Do I have to have my way for things to get done? I hope not. We need to be striving for unity. And we need to have good attitudes. And we can't have personal agendas. Too many people cause problems with their attitudes and their agendas. We only got one agenda here. That's to please the Lord and to do things His way. That's the only agenda we got. And we have to learn how to do that. And along the way, we're going to have things that we differ about. Now, brethren, I want to give you a heads up. When we get to the elders class, we're going to have some differences. But we're going to handle them in a godly way, and we're going to work through them, and we're going to go and see what the Bible says, and we can have a good discussion about some of the qualifications that cause a great deal of problem because they are misunderstood. But brethren, don't get an agenda that it's got to be this way, and if it's not this way, I'm going to cause problems, because that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. We need to do this in a godly way. But if you bind and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another. Brethren, there is nothing that is more discouraging than to see two Christians going at it anywhere. I was in a Bible class when I was 16 years old, and I won't even tell you what they were discussing because it's embarrassing. But these two men decided at the end of the business meeting, said, we need to go out back and we need to settle this. Brethren, how discouraging you think that was for a 16-year-old boy? See grown men act like that? Brethren, we need to have more sense than that. We need to always be striving for unity. Now, we all love the church as much as you do. Our attendance would be consistently good or poor. Those present would be edified or discouraged by our worship. We would never or often have trouble finding someone to do the work. Which is true for the church at Harrodsburg? Which is true concerning you? Which of those propositions would be true concerning you? And would we or would not be able to fund the local work and meet our obligations if everybody gave like you did? We would excel or fail in our personal evangelistic efforts if everybody was personally involved in evangelism like you are. And last, we would have harmony or we would have division if everybody acted like I did when there is a disagreement. Now, brethren, you know what I like about this lesson? What I like about this lesson is, it's either or. Which is it for you? And I go back to the original question. If every member of this church loved the church like you do, would the church be strong or would it be weak? And you know what the beauty of this lesson is? The church is as strong as its weakest link. The church is as strong as its weakest link. You're either a solution to the problem or you're the problem. You're either a help to make the problems go away or you're a hindrance to keep them going. Which is it for you? I can't answer it for you, but I can answer it for me. And I hope and I pray that we end this sermon where we began it this morning. You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second like to it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. May God help us to love the Lord, to love His church, and to love each other. Because by doing that, first of all, we'll be pleasing to God. Second of all, we'll be effective in the work that we carry out to do. And number three, we will be attractive for other people that want to take their membership and join us in the work. May God help us to that end. I want to thank you for your kind attention this morning and this evening. And again, I want you to know that if you believe that lessons like this are easy to preach, then you've never been in a pulpit. I'm not trying to defend you. I'm not trying to browbeat you. I'm trying to express my love for you and my concern that we need to be dedicated to what we have started to do here. And we need everybody on board. Every one of us pulling in the same direction and pulling for the same goal. And if we do that, we will accomplish great things. You know what the Bible says in 1 Corinthians chapter 3? We can water and we can plant and God will give the increase. I believe that. I believe if we do our work and we plant the seed and we water it and we strengthen one another and we love one another and we're diligent in our commitment, then this church will do and be what God wants it to be. Let each of us work to that end. If you're here tonight and you're not a child of God, we won't want to close this service without giving you an opportunity to become one. If you are one and have wandered back from the fold of safety and you need to repent and turn back to God, we want to give you the opportunity to do so. And if we can help you in any way, we bid you to come forward as together we stand as we sing. Oh,